Go. Head On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Pycod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Okay, is the magic working? We'll find out, I guess. It's about a minute past 6 p.m. here in the Eastern Time Zone. We, of course, are on Capitol Hill still, doing work on the AIC Act. This is The Horn, headonradionetwork.com. That's your home for conversation radio, where you can find, among other things, the Listen Live button, or you can listen via podcast from the feed at whiterosesociety.org under the subdomain for this program, or via iTunes, if anybody's still doing that. You can also listen on a variety of platforms for your smart devices, such as TuneIn Radio and Stitcher Internet Radio. Okie dokie. And then also at the website, you'll also find the PayPal button and the traditional overland carbon intensive mail address. That mailing address, of course, is The Horn, 1038 North Eisenhower Drive, PMB 318, Beckley, B-E-C-K-L-E-Y, W-V, 25801. And you are welcome to use that or the PayPal button in our ongoing attempts to keep this little endeavor going, because that's how we do it. You can always get that. Well, that's the only reason this program has been on as long as it has, is because of your determination and insistence that we be able to continue. We pulled up a little bit short last night and overnight, thanks to everybody who kicked in. Thanks to Jay and Philip and Linda and Anthony. Thank you very kindly. It's much appreciated. And that leaves us this evening trying to raise our usual $150 plus an extra $85 left over from yesterday. And unless math fails me, that's $235 we need to raise this evening in order to stay level with fundraising for the month of June, because it is the 11th day of June 2013, and this is Titanic Tuesday, so named for the Titanic wit that attends the right wing in this country, named for the answer given by a right wing radio host back in Almost Level West Virginia, who explained, of course, to one of his mouth-breathing, knuckle-walking listeners that there are fossilized sea life in the rock strata of West Virginia, far, far from the ocean, that were left there because of the movement of the Titanic plates. Thus, it is Titanic Tuesday on the Horn. Thank you, Marty. Marty noting the stream is working, but the magic is not. Go Spurs. Okie dokie. First sports reference of the evening. I was proud to see that Charlie Pierce noted the arrival of little Timmy Gebo into the fold of the Patriots and he being apparently quite the Patriots fan, found the best possible spin on it, noting that that Jesus had joined up with the NFL's version of Satan. Oh, John Fox, one of these days you're going to have to teach me how to find the reverb on this thing. So it's Satan, 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 Satan. Right. But it was certainly good for a giggle. And, well, it kind of makes me look more toward the opening of the NFL season when we can see just exactly what Bill Belichick decides to do with little Timmy Gebo. I personally would like to see him running crossing routes through the linebacking core of any number of NFL teams. I think it would just be fun. And Timmy would probably do it, you know, for Jeebus. Anyway, that's where we find ourselves this Tuesday evening. Turned out to be a lovely day here in Washington, D.C. Clear skies, paranoia, institutional, right, you get the idea. But we had a couple of really good meetings in congressional offices today. We reached out, among other folks, we reached out to Peter Welch in Vermont, and we reached out to Richard Hanna in New York. And we're well received in both places. It's nice when you get a meeting where people are actually interested in the issue, and they were in both instances. So our thanks to them. The days begin to get busier through the week. It is still my plan to be on air every evening this week. However, it might get a little dicey because we've got meetings running up close to the 5 o'clock hour the next 3 days. But I'll come rushing home. You know, Doodle and Ferg are here. If you want to see what a pair of brilliant young teenage lobbyists, well, they're not really lobbyists, they're affected citizens. Whose future is being quite seriously effed with by mountaintop removal. If you want to see what a couple of brilliant young teenage activists look like, check my Twitter timeline or check my Facebook feed. I posted a picture of them. You can, like I said, check the Facebook page under Bob Kincaid or at Bob Kincaid on Twitter. I snapped a little picture of them standing on the portico, I think it would be, of the Cannon House office building after we were done with our meetings today. Yes, they're high-fiving each other in the background and doing the little happy dance.
He flatters me, people.
Oh, we even got a little tee-hee out of Doodle. Oh, I miss my soundproof booth. I love them, but I miss my soundproof booth. But it's out, and I am. I'm as proud as I could be of them. They make a good case for why we should stop messing with their future and that of their little nieces and nephews and all the many, many people who are subjected to horrible, horrible disease-causing substances as a result of mountaintop removal. If you want to help out, you are more than welcome to. And we are happy, happy, happy to have it. You can go to acheact.org, acheact.org, and take action with your own member of Congress. A little shout-out here. If anyone is in the district served by Representative Michael Capuano of Massachusetts, we've got a meeting coming up with him in the next 24 hours, and if you would like to send an email to him suggesting that he please sign on to this bill, we would be most appreciative. Okie dokie? Okie dokie. So, let's see, we covered, do I have to do the math? 23 people at $10 apiece, 10 people at $23 apiece, 20 people at $11.50 apiece. Okay, that really, $235 is kind of tough to work with. But that is what we need to raise this evening in order to stay level with our fundraising for the month and hopefully keep the bills paid so that we can, you know, stay on the air. Something just buzzed at me. Hold on a minute. Well, anyway, I've got a couple of nice pieces of correspondence to share that I think you'll find interesting. Oh, for heaven's sakes. All right, where to begin? Let's begin with the correspondence this evening. First of all, let's go back to last night. Something else that just popped in. Let's go back to last night. Interesting range of responses regarding my take on the little hustle and jive going on being led by Glenn Greenwald. I'm sorry. Hustlers hustle. Grifters grift. It's what they do best. And until I see evidence to the contrary, I'm going to continue to maintain my opinion that Glenn Greenwald is a grifter who is using this supposed National Security Administration, national security scandal as a means of advancing his own agenda. He is, after all, a former worker for the Cato Institute, having cashed more than one check from the Koch brothers, which certainly calls his... if taking money from the Koch brothers does not call your credibility into question, I don't know what the does. So, just saying. But that's where I'm going to stand. You know, it's interesting that Rand Paul, for instance, Rand Paul, libertarian ophthalmologist, suddenly... isn't quite, I mean, he's going to file a class action. Now, remember, Rand Paul is a libertarian ophthalmologist and wouldn't know law from a doggy leash if he was slapped with either one of them. But he's going to file a class action in the Supreme Court and he's on behalf of everybody in the world, Wilbur. Except when it comes to Mr. Snowden, he's not quite sure. He says he's going to withhold judgment. Now, cynic that I am, I tend to think that probably has something to do with the fact that Mr. Snowden was a more than once donor to the presidential ambitions of a man who had no more chance of winning the presidency than he had a chance of winning, I don't know, Miss America, you know. Rand's daddy, that nasty old racist Ron Paul. Yeah, Snowden was a donor to his campaign and voted for him. And being as how Rand wants to sort of pick up where Ron left off, and Rand is fulminating in the thin gray settlings that pass for brains between his ears, that somehow or another he's going to be president, and Rand's been out there and telling, oh, he told Hillary Clinton, if I was the president, I'd fire you. Jesus. But he's going to withhold judgment. Because right now it's a little inconvenient to find out that this guy who, if you're on the Dianne Feinstein side of things or the John Boehner side of things, they're alleging that he's a traitor and committed treason. Rand isn't quite there yet because, well, that would mean that the traitor treasonous guy was a voter for and supporter of his cranky, nasty old racist daddy who knew nothing, I tell you, nothing about those postings in his very own newsletters that had all that racist trash in it. No. More on treason in a moment. Because actually, we talked about this, what, a week and a half ago? Treason, what constitutes treason in the United States of America? I go to a piece of correspondence from Dr. John that was in my inbox this morning. Subject line, last night was masterful. Yeah, I never close a program feeling masterful, but I appreciate the thought. Dr. John writes, you broke down this PRISM issue so well. I think you exactly identified my concern about this revelation. It has a few parts to it. One, it's obviously a Fourth Amendment issue, but we're far past having a Fourth Amendment with any real teeth. The time to squash civil liberties encroachment is about a decade past, and Dr. John, I agree with you, but I would submit that it's more like a generation past, because you have to go back a generation to find the Burger Court beginning its nasty work of undoing the Fourth Amendment. Because they did. There's a whole great big line of Fourth Amendment cases stretching back into the 1970s that essentially eviscerate the Fourth Amendment. As I've remarked in the past, I guess it's because we as human beings have relatively short lifespans and even shorter memories that we don't realize. Well, what's the song say? You don't know what you've got till it's gone. Yeah, that applies to the Fourth Amendment in particular. No, the Fourth Amendment didn't just go away with the Patriot Act. The Fourth Amendment went away with things like U.S. v. Leon that we've talked about on this program. That was quite a while back, something approaching a generation. But for the most part, people keep their head down and they attend to their lives and they worry about the power bill and they worry about the mortgage and they want to make sure that there's good food to eat on the table for the youngins. And they don't, as long as they're not violating the law, as long as the cops aren't coming through their door, they don't worry about stuff like search and seizure. Because the only people that ever raise that in court are the bad guys anyway, right? And naturally, we only tend to... Most folks don't understand that the way we find out if the law applies to the good folks is to see how it applies to those who are accused of crime. It's just in the nature of the system. So that was part one of Dr. John's observation. Part two, Fourth Amendment issues only get media play when libertarians feel they're either under threat or can make a buck off of it. Amen. Nail that one to the church door. Libertarians never do a damned thing on this little blue-green marble hurtling through the universe. Unless there's a buck in it for them. Libertarianism, especially to the extent that it has been largely corrupted and enfolded into anarcho-randianism, is nothing more than a fancy word for a political philosophy that is encapsulated in the phrase me 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 me. Okay. Fourth Amendment issues only get media play when libertarians feel they're either under threat or can make a buck off it. So the outrage is legitimate, but also too little and too late. I'm especially impressed with the too late part of that because the libertarians were surprisingly silent while the white guy was running roughshod over our civil liberties. George Bush once referred to the Constitution of the United States as, and I quote, this is not a word gratuitously used, as, and I quote, a goddamn piece of paper. And the libertarians? Na 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 na. Yeah. Or were, you know, I don't know, out singing Flow Gently Sweet Afton or something like that. But whatever it was, they were too busy to rise up in their multitude against the freedom-taking George W. Bush. But now they've got one of their own, a former employee of the Cato Institute, along with a Ron Paul donor. And suddenly they're shocked, 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 I tell you, shocked that that Negro is taking away our rights. Somebody play Lee Greenwood. Right. Too little and too late, says Dr. John. Three, we live in empire. And this is how empire behaves. We live in empire, and this is how empire behaves. I don't excuse it, but perhaps there could be some benefit. A silver lining? I know it seems unlikely. I said silver lining. Dr. John didn't. He said, I don't excuse it, but perhaps there could be some benefit. If the surveillance could be used to target the money, I'd be more than halfway on board. But what are the chances the NSA is building a tax case against Apple or Romney or a human rights case against Foxconn or Big Coal or ExxonMobil? Well, John, Dr. John, there are a lot of complicated scientific and mathematical terms for things that are really, really, really tiny. Go find the tiniest one. Four. NSA is clearly not very good at surveillance on Americans, otherwise we'd not have seen Boston or Newtown. So all the outrage seems like so much manufactured misdirection. We know media can only focus on one thing at a time, especially the for-profit media. So now it's this fake threat to our largely non-existent civil liberties rather than the real existential threats to our health and food and water posed by, say, you know, mountaintop removal or fracking. Wow. Nail that one to the church door, too. The libertarian outrage is manufactured misdirection, and if they can make a buck off it along the way, more the merrier. And again, I get what Dr. John is saying here. This is not to say that this program is not obnoxious, that in another era, an actual judge of competent mind and competent jurisdiction wouldn't just throw it out without a second glance. But that ain't this world. And nobody's going to court with powdered wigs on or knee breeches or tri-cornered hats. A functional understanding of the history of the United States let you know, as I noted last night, that whatever was left of the idea of Republican government that we had yet remaining in whatever tatters it was in did not survive the Civil War. It didn't. That's why in the early teens of the 20th century, Charles Beard found himself writing a book about the economic theory of the ratification of the Constitution, in which he noted, and was hated for it in many circles, he noted that the Constitution was written by wealthy men with an eye toward maintaining their wealth. It has been an oligarchy from the get-go, and this I don't know, knicker-twisting fantasy that at some point in our past we were this egalitarian society of freedom is a great big honking load of horse dung. We weren't. Ask the descendants of the people who were counted as 3/5 of a human being when that egalitarian society obtained. Ask women who, as I found out from being here, were imprisoned alongside common bounders, rounders, and criminals for doing nothing more than asking for the vote. And that happened less than 100 years ago. Where, in the name of God, was that egalitarian society that everybody talking about, oh, our Constitution is falling apart? Where was it? When was it? because I'm fairly conversant with the history of this nation, and I'm effed if I can find it. Was it when Bull Connor was using the hoses and the dogs? Was it somewhere on the Edmund Pettus Bridge? Was it in the internment of the Japanese during World War II? Was it when signs in New York and Boston and Philadelphia said no Irish need apply? Or maybe it was when Colonel Chivington declared, "Kill them all, nits make lice." When was it? Was it when Thomas Jefferson, who wrote such high-minded things about wanting to see an end to slavery, that 10 years later realized that slavery was the only thing that was making him a profit at Monticello and upped his nail-producing business that was run by little children slaves? When was it? 'Cause I want to know. Was it when Andrew Jackson committed the most horrible genocide that this continent had seen since the arrival of white people, or shortly thereafter? When was it? Just waiting. Was it at the Triangle Shirtwaist Factory fire? Was it at the Haymarket Massacre? Was it when the United States Army Air Corps sent airplanes to bomb working people in trenches on Blair Mountain in southern West Virginia? When the F was it that we had this shining, shining, right-bearing Constitution that protected us all and is now being shredded? When was it? Jesus, it reminds me of when the Republicans would scream when they were chasing Bill Clinton's penis, "The flag is falling!" Horseshit. Beats the daylights out of me. So Dr. John closes, and I've editorialized all over his letter. I apologize for that. Dr. John closes, "I hate the idea of this program," but meaning PRISM, you know, the government's PRISM, not Dr. Bill's PRISM. We really do need to differentiate those two things. Among other things, PRISM West Virginia has a much more interesting logo. Dr. John says, "I hate the idea of this program, but I don't feel threatened by it. And I don't think it's unexpected. That doesn't make it any better. But in the big picture, there are much bigger threats than surveillance, and those threats don't come from terrorists, but from corporate persons and the money that runs them." And that's so true. That is so absolutely true. Because among other things, while everybody's running around with their knickers in a sodden twist, talking about the Obama administration's assault on freedom, what we're overlooking is the fact that the people who Snowden. While we're running around with our knickers in a sodden twist over that freedom-taking Obama, the real story here, as Philip pointed out last night, is that, by God, this has a lot to do with the fact that we subcontracted out our national security, just like we subcontracted out the delivery of the mail in Iraq, just like we subcontracted out the mess halls in Iraq. I'll take a Halliburger. That'll be $29. Part 3. We live in empire, and this is how empire behaves. Don't know why that's so damned hard to understand. But it is, apparently. Maybe we'll figure out why. Maybe. Maybe. And you know, there are stories out there that highlight the real world horrors of our police state. Because we are a military police state, because empires trend toward being that. Isaac sent something along. A story out of Clark County, Nevada, that's getting some traction. Of course, how many other cop stories do we need out there? Cops beating people, cops shooting people. Yeah. That's the real police state that sucks so good. You know, I doubt that a woman who is actually sexually assaulted in a courthouse is much worried about whether the government knows what her IP address is. Now, by no means am I suggesting that this is a non-story, but we are getting it entirely wrong because the for-profit media are feeding it to us entirely wrong, and we've got somebody else, and we've got people out there who are spinning it entirely wrong. Just saying. Now, yes, thank you, Texas Betsy. George W. Pinhead was, of course, wrong. It's not a goddamn piece of paper. It's a goddamn piece of parchment. So, you know, take that, George. And then responding to another query. Oh, to have a staff. But anyway, let me call this because I want you to. Where in the hell did this audio? This piece go? No, that's not it. That's not it. That's not it. That's not it. Well, dang! I hate it when that happens. Let's call it. There it is. There it is. Different browser. Gets confusing. So anyway, this is a story about a woman by the name of Monica Contreras, who had been hailed into family court in Clark County, Nevada. Clark County, by the way, named for one of the most notoriously corrupt men ever to get anywhere near the United States Senate. By near, I mean into it. Monica Contreras and her 2-year-old daughter were hailed into family court in August of 2011. Her husband had filed for a temporary restraining order against her during their divorce, but he didn't show up in court, so the order was denied. Now, Ms. Contreras was, after the thing was denied, Ms. Contreras was walking out of the courtroom. I mean, it's that simple. and a family court marshal named Ron Fox ordered her into a waiting area for a, nudge, nudge, wink, wink, drug search, where he proceeded to give her a groping, touching her buttocks, her breast, and ordering her to lift up her blouse. Here's the interesting part. After her complaint, her complaint was validated. So understand, a family court judge by the name of Patricia Doninger was watching everything that happened as she cried out for help. Her baby, her 2-year-old, was watching everything that happened as mommy cried out for help. There was a great big old deputy of some sort, and the court marshal. The news story comes from Channel 8, the I Team in Las Vegas, who report the firing of the marshal. Let's pick it up there.
Disturbing to some. So I'm just going to close the case out and dissolve the order.
All right, thank you. Okay.
Monica Contreras came to family court with her 2-year-old daughter. She was in court for only a few minutes on a routine divorce case. According to internal court documents reviewed by the I-Team, family court marshal Ron Fox ordered Contreras into a waiting room by herself for an unexplainable drug search. Contreras says Marshal Fox touched her buttocks, breast, and ordered her to lift up her shirt. A later internal investigation validated her claims. Contreras went right back into the same courtroom to tell hearing master Patricia Doninger her requests to have a female marshal search her were ignored.
I think I'd rather have a female. I mean, when you're... I was just offended by it. I'm just offended that he asked me to do that.
Okay, so the story stands. Hands up.
Contreras pleads as Marshal James Kenyon begins to arrest her.
For what, sir?
Hold on.
Okay, why would I be arrested? Can you please tell
me? Turn around, put your hands behind your back.
Can you please tell me?
Turn around, put your hands behind your back. Because of false allegations made against a police officer, so...
What?
We looked and could find no law supporting that arrest, let alone any law allowing an alleged sexual assault victim to be arrested by the alleged assaulter.
Jimmy, I got court. I still have to do this, so arrest her. I take the kids.
Why?
We're done.
Why would you do that to me, sir?
Because you're making false allegations.
After repeated attempts by marshals to get Contreras to recant her story, she breaks down.
Let me go home, please. Let me go. It was all lies. I don't want to tell anything. It was all lies. All lies. All lies. All lies. Please stop.
We can do this the easy way. We can do this to her.
Marshal Fox tells Contreras the only way she can avoid jail is to step up to the microphone and recant. Contreras agrees, but does the opposite.
You asked me to lift up my shirt without a witness.
Okay.
You asked me to lift my shirt without a witness.
For 4 minutes, Contreras pleaded to hearing master Patricia Doninger to hear her. Doninger didn't look at the alleged sexual assault victim, deciding instead to play with Contreras' daughter.
How could you watch?
Contreras' 2-year-old daughter confronts the marshals arresting her mother. Contreras kisses her daughter before being sent to jail. Her young daughter sent to Child Haven. 2 months later, Contreras filed a complaint with Court Martial Internal Affairs. Sources tell the I-Team investigators were shocked. They never heard of the alleged courthouse sexual assault from Family Court Lieutenant Steve Rushfield. After a 6-month Internal Affairs investigation, Marshal Ron Fox was fired. Nobody from Clark County told Monica Contreras that. She found out because we found her. Contreras asked that we blur her face.
I just hope I did the right thing by telling Internal Affairs. It makes me feel good because now I know that I was right.
We went to the top of Clark County Court Administration. They released a statement reading, "Court personnel are prohibited from commenting on the video because it's a personnel matter. When the actions of any district court employee are called into question, the court immediately responds by conducting a fair, thorough investigation, and upon completion, taking appropriate action." Even though Marshall Fox was fired, sources tell the I-Team Clark County is widening its investigation into why this incident and a growing number of assault allegations were never reported by family court management to internal affairs. Marshall.
Now, can we just have a little perspective moment? You tell me, which is more important? Which is a more flagrant violation of, say, what used to be the Fourth Amendment? That? Or the libertarian hustle that's being run right now? Pick one. They're not the same. Well, okay, that's just a woman, right? That's just a woman with a 2-year-old daughter, and she's in Las Vegas, and, well, you know, she probably did something to deserve to get arrested, right? See, I don't buy that for a minute. We've got a vast, vast problem in this country, and it doesn't have a damned thing to do with data vacuuming or data mining or metadata or maxi data or... Now, all of that business is obnoxious. But they are two pieces of a set. I remember years ago talking to Scott Ritter at a Seneca 2 forum down in Institute, West Virginia. We broadcasted it at the time. And the question was put from the audience to Mr. Ritter, are we becoming a fascist country? And he very carefully considered the question as it was put. And he said, you know, I get this question asked of me a whole lot. Are we becoming a fascist country? And he said, I used to say no. Because he said, I think it is something a little more would have to happen to us. But now I still say no, but I don't say no because I don't think we're becoming a fascist country. I say no because we already are one. The angry Indian sending a note to me. He says, how about the fact that in this case in Clark County, Nevada, this is a vulnerable person placed in a compromising position by those in authority who are supposed to protect the public from exactly this sort of abuse. Let's take it a step further. How's about the fact that this was family court? How about the fact that the hearing master, the judge, for all intents and purposes, watched all of this go down in complete impassivity? How about the fact that she heard a woman come straight up to the microphone who was threatened and told that she had to recant what she had said, and yet still had the presence of mind and the courage to say what was true, and still did nothing? What have I said about fascism? That it prizes and rewards those who keep their heads down. And this is one story. There's others. Sometimes governments are involved. Sometimes it's individuals. The hacker who busted into the slimy, seedy, sleazy world of Steubenville, Ohio, that guy is going to do more jail time than the two guys who raped the victim. What do you think? Jan, writing from out that way, Clark County, Nevada is a very sick county, but that's just one of the many across this fascist police state country. Bingo. Bingo. Now, I still find it a little bit, well, funny, really. Yeah, funny. Mr. Snowden decided to defect to China because he said that the communist Chinese, and communist is not one of those words that sends my hackles up, and they're not really communists anyway, they're fascist too, that the People's Republic of China has a vigorous and healthy regard for freedom of speech and open debate. No, I did. I cackled like a hen laying eggs when I read that. And that was another one of those moments where I realized that something just wasn't quite right. Because, see, that wasn't somebody saying he said that. He said that looking at a camera into a microphone. And it's not like it was the people, the prisoners from the Mayaguez or the Pueblo either. And there were no little hand signs that somebody had a gun to his head. Sergi writing in, shocking. The dirty cops and court staff don't shock me in the least, considering the general fascist direction this country's been heading in for years now. What does shock me is the fact that a local for-profit TV news station found the time between talking about local restaurants and casinos and videos from YouTube of skateboarding dogs to actually do that hard-hitting investigation. Glad they put the fluff aside to expose those jerkwads. And see, that, but by the same token, Sergi, that's kind of easy. Because it's open and out there. It's not, it's, but easy or not, I'm glad it was done. And they went and found the victim. Of course, it's helpful that they could advance you. The I-team is on your side, right? Isn't that how it plays? I mean, that's not all. Oh, my God, here's another individual using the word democracy in regard to this country. I'm convinced that you cannot actually know what the word democracy means and actually use it in reference to the United States of America. You can't do those two things at the same time because we're not one. And anybody who says our democracy has just given, that's a giant tell that you have given yourself away as comprehending exactly nothing about the nature of this government. Right, yeah, exactly. Thanks, Lottie. That People's Republic of Korea commitment to open debate and free speech. Lottie in the chat room noting, Bob, just ask anybody in Tiananmen Square. God almighty. It is, and I will say this freely, I'm glad. I've always been a big fan of the American Civil Liberties Union. I'm glad that they filed a lawsuit today against the Obama administration over the domestic spying program. because, unless I'm mistaken, they tried to do something similar back when the white guy was caught doing it. Didn't they? Yeah, the angry Indian with a trenchant observation, he says, if you're non-white or poor and white, this country became fascist a long time ago. And that's the truth, the absolute truth. But the ACLU did file suit today. It will probably wander its way through to the Supreme Court. And I'm sure no less than a half a dozen times along the way, some member of the Justice Department will squeal, national security exception, national security, get out of jail free card, damn it. Help him. Help him. You know, him being a libertarian and all, I wonder, and having made some pretty tasty coin over the last couple of years, wonder if he had a good bit of it squirreled away in gold. There's never been a better time to buy gold now. Just wondering. I mean, that's what those Ron Paul voter types do, right? Yeah. And, you know, I like the statement that the ACLU offered in the complaint, saying that the PRISM program, quote, gives the government a comprehensive record of our associations and public movements, revealing a wealth of detail about our familial, political, professional, religious, and intimate associations. It is likely to have a chilling effect on whistleblowers and others who would otherwise contact the ACLU to defend their rights. But I like the fact that they use chilling effect. Because it does. It has a chilling. It's not just a Fourth Amendment issue. It is a First Amendment issue. It serves in its own way as a sort of soft prior restraint. But how many of us didn't know? Show of hands. Come on. How many of us didn't know this was happening? Since at least, what, October 2004 or November 2004, or was it December 2004, when the New York Times first reported that the God-fearing, upstanding, moral, born-again Christian white guy was having it done to us? How many of us thought that it went away? How many of us thought that it stopped? How many of us thought that it had been ended because, you know, freedom? Because after all, when we found out that the God-fearing, upstanding Christian white guy was doing it, we came to Washington in our millions, didn't we? And we surrounded the White House, and we didn't go away until they promised to stop it. Oh, wait, that never happened. Yeah, but now that black dude's doing it, and we can't tolerate that. What a con. But I say Godspeed or whomever speed, good luck, bonne chance, bona fortuna to the ACLU. I absolutely support what they're doing here. Now, what's interesting is that the ACLU is claiming direct standing to bring the lawsuit because they are a customer of Verizon Business Network services. It will be interesting to note. It is. I mean, I'm looking at the New York Times story, and at least they had the common decency to note that this is a Bush administration thing. You know, I wonder. Well, no, I'm not going to say that. Andy says it's not fair for me to say he's in communist China. okay, but Hong Kong is a part of the People's Republic of China. And Andy notes that the People's Republic of China continues to tolerate Hong Kong using British common law. Okay. Andy says, my understanding is mainland Chinese cannot easily go back and forth between the mainland and Hong Kong. It has a separate currency system and economic trading system compared to the mainland. It's much more open. Legal system still under British law. It's not fair to say he's in communist China. Well, I'm not afraid of communist. That word doesn't scare me. I've never been particularly bugabooed by that word. But the People's Republic of China is in charge, are in charge, pick one, of Hong Kong. And they can lure the boom anytime they want to, and there's not a damn thing anybody in the world can do about it. And frankly, Snowden did not say Hong Kong values freedom of expression and vigorous debate, or whatever the quote was. He didn't say it was Hong Kong. He said China has. So I think it's also a little bit unfair to separate out Hong Kong when Mr. Snowden never did. So it will be interesting to watch this case play out. It is equally interesting and certainly disgusting to hear Dianne Feinstein use the word treason and John Boehner use the word traitor. Treason in particular is odious in its usage. Because, as we may remember from previous conversations, treason is the only crime defined in the Constitution of the United States. Article 3. Of the Constitution in particular, which establishes the judiciary. Article 3, Section 3, defines treason. Senator Feinstein, are you listening, honey? Madam, are you listening? It would be good if you were. Because before you go running around saying somebody's committed treason, it might do you well to know what treason is. Treason against the United States shall consist only in levying war against them, or in adhering to their enemies, giving them aid and comfort. No person shall be convicted of treason unless on the testimony of two witnesses to the same overt act, or on confession in open court. Now, it's interesting that Section 3 of Article 3 was written long before the Bill of Rights was. James Madison had to actually be convinced that the Bill of Rights was necessary, and he only knuckled under when it became clear that the Constitution would not be ratified. What the hell was that noise? Would not be ratified without the Bill of Rights. So long before the right against self-incrimination was a part of the document, lo and behold, Article 3, Section 3 says that no person shall be convicted of treason unless on the testimony of two witnesses to the same overt act or on confession in open court. Said confession not being coercible. The Congress shall have power to declare the punishment of treason, but no attainder of treason shall work corruption of blood or forfeiture except during the life of the person attainted. Let's go back to the first paragraph. Treason against the United States shall consist only in levying war against them or in adhering to their enemies, giving them aid and comfort. Those, is it time to diagram sentences again? Oh, no. But it may well be. because there are two clauses there, one of which is independent. And the other, highly dependent. There are two ways, not three, but two. There are two ways to commit treason. Senator Feinstein, don't go to sleep. I'll throw the eraser. I will. Only in levying war against them, them being the United States, and frankly, levying war has a pretty narrow definition. Unless suddenly we're going to redefine war as, you know, cyber war. Or, I mean, Snowden didn't even do that. It's not like he gave the NSA a virus. Although if I were the NSA, I would be right smart worried about now. Because God forbid that Anonymous picks up on this and gets busy. Then it could get real interesting. Shall consist only in levying war against them. And I think it's pretty clear that Snowden has not levied war against anyone. He's disclosed some documents. He's made some people pretty damn mad. And he's sent the flaming paranoia heads of this government swirling into outer space. He hasn't levied war against anybody. So that leaves option two, Senator Feinstein. Adhering to their enemies, giving them aid and comfort. So you got two things going on there. You have to adhere to our enemies, and then you have to give the enemies aid and comfort. Again, I think it's going to be hard to say, I mean, who's the enemy here? See, doesn't it get sticky in a hurry? I mean, he didn't give it to China. And frankly, under the circumstances, I would be damned careful about saying China was an enemy, Senator Feinstein. I mean, really? I'm in D.C. and West Virginia. You're in California. Your fat's in the fire quicker than mine is, sister. Or maybe the enemy... Well, wait, where was Glenn Greenwald when he broke this story? Oh, yeah, Brazil. Yeah, that could be... Maybe Brazil could be the enemy, wouldn't it? Wouldn't that be fun? Brazil? I mean... if you're gonna have an enemy, it might be somewhere. It might as well be somewhere that's fun to go to, right? Brazil. It's got some potential, doesn't it? I mean, wouldn't it be? I mean, especially at carnival time. Oh, dear. Oh, dear. Oh, dear. Senator Feinstein, this is not working out. Adhering to the enemy and giving them aid and comfort. If anything, nobody is comfortable as a result of what's going on here. Nobody. Everybody's kind of in a conniption, aren't they? Andy chiming in. By the way, Bob, Senator Dianne Feinstein is an effing idiot, a complete piece of 1% excrement. Her job is to protect the wealth and maintain the police state for her billionaire friends. You know, if I had somebody that had that important a job, Andy, I'd want it to be a smart one. Doesn't sound like we're dealing with one. Oh, now, Texas Betsy, I can call Dianne Feinstein honey if I want to. It beats me calling her, you freaking moron. Moran. I don't know which. Tim from L.A. writing in, I had dreams in my college's journalism department to become an investigative reporter. I love the police beat and did two stories involving homicides within our college family. But reality kicked in when hard news or investigative stories are looked over, as Sergi said, fluff over stories worth reading. Bob, you're correct. This story involved a law enforcement officer who committed a sexual battery and was fired. But my question is, why would a news team then not investigate further into the allegation and see if there's a pattern, not only within the family court in Clark County, but in city, county, or hell, even state? According to statistics, about 75 to 95% of sex crimes are never reported to the police because of shame. How many of them were victims of the police like this woman? She had a lot of guts speaking up, but she landed in jail regardless. And sadly, the police state also uses the war on women to get their way, and they do. Wowzer. And, of course, the investigation is expanding, according to that report. Because if nothing else, the woman who sat there and watched it happen needs at least a vigorous reprimand, doesn't she? I mean, how do you do that? Just sit there and watch a woman complain of rape or a sexual assault and not do something? I'm damned if I can figure out how that works. Then again, maybe we hold people to higher standards of conscience than that of which they are perhaps capable. Does that make sense? It's the best I can do. So there we are at the close of the evening's filibobster. And what I'm going to do, let me explain just a little bit of the technical aspect or angle of all of this. In order for me to connect to the phones back in the studio, back in the studio at the mansion, I have to use the Skype account to do it. Well, before I go to Skype, I'm going to open the Skype line. I mean, before I connect to Agnes for the phones, I want to open the Skype lines for anybody who wants to connect that way. And so if you want to get involved in the conversation, Skype me at Bob Kincaid Horn, BobKincaidHorn, Bob Kincaid Horn. And, we'll get with it. We've got a break coming up. It's about 10 minutes past the hour. And you are more than welcome to chime in. Your emails are also always welcome. You can also reach in via Twitter and via Facebook. pretty much, well, then, of course, there's always the regular phone lines later, 304-658-3333. So, whatever works best for you works well for me. Sorry, I'm actually looking for bumper music here. I know what I want. Oh, well, maybe this is not going to play. Yeah, that works. So anyway, here's how it works out. We'll take a little break. Come back. Your calls. And just a little reminder. Thus far, not so much going on in the way of things happening to keep the program on the air. We needed to raise $235 this evening. We are at zero. So there's that to contend with as well. PayPal buttons at headonradionetwork.com. So too is the traditional mail address under the tab Contribute. So we'll be back. This is The Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid.
Get up, stand up, stand up for your right. Get up, stand up, stand up for your right. Get up, stand up, stand up for your right. Get up, stand up, don't give up the fight.
It's Tuesday, June 11, 2013.
We are still perfectly on track for a temperature increase up to 5.3 degrees Celsius.
A record jump in global carbon emissions. The U.S. and China announce major climate agreement. Another court victory for Monsanto. Plus, as California Solar breaks new records.
They were playing with the health and public safety of 8.4 million people.
One of the state's old nuclear plants closes forever.
I like this report already. All of that and more straight ahead from bradblog.com. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comments.
Monsanto is the real victim here. They could face criminal prosecution and be fined up to $1 million. Do you know how long it takes Monsanto to earn $1 million? Oh, they just did.
Yep, and they just did it again. This is your Green News Report.
And again.
Okay, Desi Doyen, I know you've got a lot of pretty big news to get to today, so I'm shutting up and letting you have at it. What do you have for us?
Well, first, global carbon dioxide emissions jumped 1.4% in 2012. That's the fastest increase on record, according to a new report from the UN's International Energy Agency. While it may not seem like much, the IEA says that if that rate of emissions continues and no action is taken, by the year 2100, that CO2 buildup in the atmosphere means global temperatures could exceed the international target of limiting the rise to just 2 degrees Celsius relative to pre-industrial times. That's according to Fatih Birol, the IEA's chief economist.
We are still perfectly on track for a temperature increase up to 5.3 degrees Celsius. And this is a trend that we don't want to see.
No, we don't. 5.3 degrees Celsius?
Yes, that is 9 degrees Fahrenheit. That's double the UN treaty target of 2 degrees Celsius. Now, what does that feel like? Well, in 40 years, New York City is predicted to be as hot as Birmingham, Alabama was in the 20th century. But the IEA does recommend 4 key actions governments can take right now with current technology that could help stave this off, which is energy efficiency, phasing out use of inefficient coal power plants, reducing methane leaks from oil and gas drilling, and phasing out government subsidies of fossil fuels. But there's some encouraging news. At an informal summit over the weekend in Southern California, President Obama and Chinese President Xi Jinping announced a major climate agreement to cooperate to phase out use of hydrofluorocarbons, or HFCs. Those are used in refrigeration and air conditioning. HFCs are now known to be a potent greenhouse gas, but HFCs last a relatively short time in the atmosphere, only about 10 to 15 years, meaning cutting HFCs could deliver some immediate short-term results. They would be phased out under the wildly successful Montreal Protocol, which saved the ozone layer.
It's a very old plant. It is risky anyway.
In a setback for the U.S. nuclear power industry, private utility company Edison International says it will permanently close 2 reactors at the San Onofre Nuclear Generating Station power plant near San Diego.
That's huge news.
Yes, that is. The 2 reactors have been closed for a year and a half after a small radioactive steam leak revealed dangerous cracks in the facility's new steam generator system. The executives say that it will eliminate 1,100 jobs. It will take decades to permanently decommission, and about $3 billion. But meanwhile, some extra good news. California's electric grid operator says solar power generation in the state reached a record high on Friday afternoon, generating almost the equivalent of the maximum power output of San Onofre.
That is good news. 2 pieces of good news, and not just because that San Onofre plant is the closest one to us here at the Green News Report. So I'm delighted to hear that shut down. I'm delighted to hear solar is going very well in California.
In fact, it was the best first quarter for the American solar industry ever.
Yeah, but it's just a boutique energy. That's what they told me on Fox News. So what else you got?
Well, Germany generated 40% of their peak power demand using solar last week.
Yeah, but Fox News told me Germany gets a lot more sunshine than the U.S.
The United States simply hasn't figured out how to do solar. You look at the country of Germany, It's working out great for them.
What was Germany doing correct? Are they just a smaller country and made it more
They're a smaller country, and they've got lots of sun,
right?
They've got a lot more sun than we do.
Yeah, they're crazy.
And wrong.
Finally, another court victory for Monsanto. An appellate court has thrown out a lawsuit from organic growers that would stop biotech giant Monsanto from suing them if traces of Monsanto's patented genes are found in their certified organic crops. The appellate court instead relied on Monsanto's website that says Monsanto will never sue them as long as the mix of GMO genes found in their crops is only a trace amount.
I see. Any news on where that Monsanto GMO wheat that showed up in Oregon came from?
Nope.
They still don't know. But other than that, let's just trust Monsanto. For all of those stories and more, please check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. Don't forget, you can download us anytime via iTunes, Stitcher, or the TuneIn Radio app. Find us and like us on the Facebook and follow us 24/7 on the Twitters at Green News Report. From bradblog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your nuclear-free Green News Report.
Good day, sunshine. Good day, sunshine. Good day, sunshine. I need to laugh, and when the sun is out,
it's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head on with Bob Kincaid.
Yes, indeedy. 26 minutes past the hour, about halfway through the program this evening. Huge thanks go out. I didn't check to see if I could use names, but... tell me if I can. Huge thanks go out to a pair of individuals who have gotten us within $65 of our fundraising goal for the evening, which will put us back on an even keel heading into tomorrow's prayer meeting, Wednesday edition of The Horn. Thank you. Thank you immensely. It makes it possible for this all to continue. Interesting how Brad and Desi mentioned that boutique industry aspect that they keep talking about with wind and solar. I've got a sort of a back reference for that here in a couple of minutes, so just bear with me, please. I want to share something with you. I get remarkable emails to share with you guys. And I got one yesterday from Steve. And Steve wanted this shared with you. He said, Dear Bob, I've listened to your program now for a few months. I love it. I feel support from it. It's more than a program. I feel that if I ran into you anywhere, it would be like running into a next-door neighbor I've had for 20 years. That's charming. That's a confirmation of the whole theory that this thing runs under. This notion of community. Maybe it's catharsis or desperation, but I feel the need to write to you now. I was trained as an attorney with all of the debt to show for it. I'm 42 years old. I've been fortunate to have practiced steadily for nearly 10 years. I got what I thought was the job that I was going to stay at for the next several years in June of 2012. Well, less than a week ago, my boss calls me into his office to tell me he's letting me go because they don't have enough work for me. I've wanted to get out of the practice of law for a while now, but this was such a surprise. The last few days have been a series of rather high ups. Yes, splashes of hope because I have friends to be around. And some lows that I wouldn't wish on my worst enemy. I feel almost ashamed to email you about this. Never. Never feel that. Never feel that. Shame is for the things that we do wrong. Shame is for the things, for the ills that we do to other people. I don't see anything in this for shame, Steve. I feel almost ashamed to email you about this because I was making a six-figure income, unlike so many others out there. But you know what? I had a hard time making ends meet. Between the debts I had to repay and having to help a partner, gay man here, as I promised I would, it was hard. So here I am looking for work, any work, because I need the money, but even more so because the boredom of seeking employment, of sitting in front of a computer 5, 6, 8 hours per day or more, stands to kill a person. I have continually told myself, I know I'll get through this, I know I will, but damn it, it's hard. Damn it, when I see that I just applied for unemployment insurance at the amount of $405 per week, minus 10% for federal taxes and 2.5% for New York State taxes, I can't help but hear the echoes in my mind of people who actually think that people want to sit here and get this huge windfall of $405 a week to do nothing. Bob, when I hear the asshats in Congress talk about people being lazy and wanting to sit home and collect that fat unemployment check, I want to scream. Or more. Just once, I want one of those bastards to live a day in the life of the 99%. And you want to know what really makes me feel awful? The fact that I feel this way. Why? I have an education. I have a license to practice law. I don't have kids to support. I know it's easier for me to get a job again than an awful lot of people, but Bob, I don't come from a rich family. My dad was the first to go to college. I come from regular folk, from Western Ohio, Dayton, Greenville, and surrounding places. I'm well aware of how fortunate I am, believe me. But you know what? I am sick of people like Bishop Willard and the other 1%ers who never have worked a day in their lives, have not had to worry about food, rent, medication. I was just diagnosed bipolar, Steve says. In the course of the last few years, my 100K plus student loans fell behind and went into default. I'm trying to pay something. I want to pay something. I call up this bank and tell them what happened. I hear the possibility of litigation against me. What do I do? The fact is that this bank was number 20 on the list of funds received from TARP. Yet they, like all others, like so many Wall Street types, are shaking the indignant finger of personal responsibility in my face, your face, and the faces of the 99%. And you know what? I'm sick of it. I'm fucking sick of it. The nearly $1,000 to get my car out of impound for a couple of parking tickets is more than George W. Bush paid for his war crimes. It's more than all the Wall Street mongrels paid for their bank fraud put together. Yet there waves that finger telling me, us, we have to be responsible. I know I'm rambling. I don't think you were. And I hope you accept my apology for that. No apology necessary. But I just had to vent to a person whom I've never met and probably never will, but a person, you, that I actually call a friend. Most sincerely and even more respectfully yours, Steve. Perspective. Perspective. It goes back to Dr. John's email. There are real crises in this country that people are concerned about and won't, and about which people won't get off their rear ends. We are justifiably worried about kids who are in college. Kids, I'm sorry. Young people who are in college now, who have not just a whole hell of a lot of hope of finding any kind of meaningful work, and will come out of college absolutely crippled with student debt. And yet our government, in a sublime act of dysfunction, can't decide that their interest rates ought not eat them alive. But we forget that the whole student loan, student debt debacle has been with us for a very long time. A very long time. It's been chewing on people for eons. And I would suggest to you that that's probably by design. And this is not the part of the program where we wrap our heads in aluminum foil, because Reynolds wrap keeps everything wrapped up tight. It's by design, because we have to feed the plutocratic oligarchic corporate monster in this country. Now, I knew that back when I had my cup of coffee in law school, I knew people that took jobs fresh out of law school that were paying $75,000 a year. And, you know, that was the early 90s. That was awfully damn good money. Until you factored in the loan payments. And then the money was a little less good. And then, since the only people paying this kind of money were hotshot business corporate client type firms, you knew that the person who had just taken that money was going to work about 12 to 15 hours a day, scrambling to make every last minute of every last hour billable. And this person was going to do that Monday through Friday and from about 6 a.m. to 2 p.m. on Saturdays. And it wasn't going to leave just a hell of a lot of time for enjoying anything. And they were going to have to do this for at least 5 years before they made what's referred to in the pyramid scheme that is the law gig, a junior partner. And I thought that was just a horrifying thing to contemplate. And most of these people who were doing this would tell you that they had plans to be a mommy or a daddy. When? And then there was the odious reality of the fact that, well, you know, it being West Virginia and everything, you were getting that 70 large a year to either go and screw people in workers' compensation cases on behalf of coal companies and litigate the workers' compensation system to make sure that a guy couldn't get a freaking pill, or else you were going to do some other kind of defense work that was going to involve screwing people to the ground. And at the same time, you were supposed to, you know, keep your sense of perspective and your sense of self and your sense of conscience and your right. So Steve has nothing to be ashamed of in what he writes, but ever so much for me to thank him for sharing with us another slice of the reality of the American dream. See, it doesn't have to be this way. Ask anybody of a certain age who knew what the education system was in, for instance, a place like California before Ronald Reagan came along and started dismantling the education system. There used to be an idea that obtained in California that if you got through high school, you were going to go to college somewhere and you were not going to be broken on the rack of debt for it, because there was a valid public policy in educating the populace and making them ever more capable. Man, you look back, that went out with high button greaves. We are the ones who have to be personally responsible. We're the ones, as Steve notes, who get the finger waved in our faces. And at the same time, Eddie Munster, Paul Ryan, who said that we don't want the social safety net to become a hammock? Or Rick Sanctum Sanctorum, Bro Fro Mix, who said, don't want our money to go into blah people. Said blah people. Didn't say black people. I said blah people. You know, blah. Yeah. So thanks, Steve, for that tremendous slice of reality. And you'll be in all of our thoughts. And please keep us posted. Please keep us updated. Because when you share something like that, well, it kind of automatically gets you your little membership card, decoder ring, and certificate suitable for framing to the Horn family commune. Thank you. Thanks also going out to Mark and Jack and Jenny, who, between them, have just gotten us to the end of our fundraising goal for the evening. So thank you to everyone who just made that happen here at 19 minutes before 8 p.m. on this Tuesday, the 11th day of June, 2013. Thank you very, very much. Now, as I said, the phone lines are open. If you want to connect via the Skype line, you're welcome to do that, Bob Kincaid Horn. Or if, however, you prefer to use the regular telephone lines, that's 304-658-3333, and both ways work fine. It's just a matter of when which happens. If you want to use the Skype line directly, that's better done sooner rather than later, because once the phone lines light up, I have to connect to the boss that way. If we add one more computer into the mix, well, but I can't even contemplate that right now. Stories? Oh, lots of stories. Lots and lots of stories. Some more horrifying than others. Some sillier than others. What is it about people who used to play for the Atlanta Braves? And this is a tough one for me because, well, I was kind of a Braves fan. I grew up back when the Braves absolutely sucked, when the only good things about the Braves were Hank Aaron and Phil Niekro. And so some of us reveled in seeing them begin to win toward the end of the 80s and in the beginning of the 90s. Well, Chipper Jones will probably go into the Hall of Fame after his 5 years, but he ain't gone in for stuff like this. What did Mark Twain say? It is better to remain silent and be thought a fool than to open one's mouth and remove all doubt. Well, Mr. Clemens, welcome to the 21st century. We'll be happy to modify your words. It is better to not tweet and be thought a fool than to fire up the Twitter and remove all doubt. We are, of course, in an ongoing debate about immigration in this country. A debate that really shouldn't even be happening at all if we were anything remotely resembling the image that we create for ourselves. You know, that give me your tired, your poor, your huddled masses yearning to breathe free That Emma Lazarus stuff that's on that big statue in New York Harbor. It's French. But we're having an immigration debate. And Chipper Jones grew up in Florida. And he played a great third base. He was a wonderful hitter. For what I'm about to read you, he got retweeted 2,196 times. And here's the fun part. He got favorited 1,234 times. Now, I'm not that up on Twitter metrics, but that sounds like a lot. You're gonna love this. Chipper Jones, ex-baseball player, apparently currently a philosopher. He's a philosopher. Tweets out of nowhere. Y'all think if they took all them gators they trap in Florida and Louisiana and put them in the Rio Grande, it would stop the illegals from crossing? Question mark. JK. JK means just kidding. Which part is he kidding about? That they really don't trap alligators in Florida and Louisiana? That he doesn't want to stop the illegals crossing, or that he doesn't really want to put the trapped gators in the Rio Grande? Because that JK is sort of nebulous hanging out there. Y'all think if I took all them gators... Hey, Andy, look at my new haircut. It's all slickety in the back. Y'all think if I took all them gators they trapped in Florida and Louisiana and put them in the Rio Grande... Andy, she called me a creature. Y'all think if they took all them gators they trap in Florida and Louisiana and put them in the Rio Grande, it would stop the illegals from crossing? Man, do I despise that. Now, here's a guy who is absolutely up to his single eyebrow in privilege. White privilege, male privilege, wealth privilege, who wouldn't know a bad day if it introduced itself to him with a business card, who has been adored by millions. And he has to take time out of his day at 3:10 p.m. on 8 June 2013. Why aren't you on the effing golf course, Chipper? Or out somewhere toddling around in your Porsche or your Maserati or your freaking Maybach? Why aren't you out pondering the wonders of nature? No, but at 3:10 p.m. on the 8th of June, 2013, Chipper Jones tweeted that, what was he doing at 3:10 p.m. on 8 June? What the hell day was 8 June? Dang, Chipper, it's a Saturday. Oh, I know. Got it now. You'd actually finished the round of golf. You were in the grill. And you were on beer number 16 when you decided it was time to share your brilliance with the world. Y'all think if they took all them gators they trap in Florida and Louisiana and put them in the Rio Grande, it would stop the illegals from crossing? JK. IDK, Chipper Jones. IDK. LMAO. ROFL. FUWARHP. I bet my teenage daughter doesn't know. I hope the hell she doesn't know what that means. FU with a red hot poker. Honest to Pete. But, you know, that's what passes for reasoned discourse among the 1%, because make no mistake, Chipper Jones is a part of the 1%. Ain't it? beautiful. But Agnes tells me we actually have folks on the line. Let's, Agnes, if you're ready, let's go to Kevin calling from Colorado Springs.
Hello there, Bob.
Hey, Kevin, how are you?
Good. I'd say Chipper Jones just lost quite a bit of respect in my eyes. You know, what really gets me about the comment like that is he played, no doubt, with many ball players from the Dominican Republic.
Venezuela, Panama. I seem to recall a certain Panamanian relief pitcher making him look rather foolish in a couple of World Series. Mariano yep. Rivera.
But it's that, you know, you played with him, you lived with him, and all this time you're thinking that. You know, it just blows my mind that the human population, can't look at other people and just consider them other people. We've got to look at them based on race or gender or whatever. And it,
yeah, what I find so disturbing out of this, though, Kevin, is the idea that, you know, he hangs that just kidding out there. But for a minute there, as his little thumbs were going great guns and you know, iPhone or whatever the hell he's got, he's sitting there tweeting along and he's thinking how funny it would be to watch a alligator eat a Mexican.
Yep.
Jesus.
Yeah, I don't know, and what you're saying about the fact that he doesn't have a bad day in his life. You know, relatively speaking, a bad day for him would be to end up on the disabled list because of a hangnail kind of thing, you know.
That'll get you day-to-day status.
They seem to forget, and I've seen this with some athletes, not all, but they seem to forget from whence they came. Before they were professional athletes, they didn't have all that money. And they fought their way to the top. Now that they're athletes, it's just like Paul Ryan. Yeah, you took all the benefits of Social Security for all it was worth, but you don't want to turn the social safety net into a hammock.
I'm sorry, that may be one of the most hateful things ever said in all of American political dialogue, but I still snort when I hear it because, you know, I've dealt with unemployment insurance in the past, and I can tell you one thing I never did. In the time I was on unemployment, I never once got in a hammock. In fact, I was out of the bed early and into the bed late, sitting there pounding around and trying to find some sort of godforsaken job.
Yeah, and I'm out here living on disability, making a whole grand a month, and it certainly isn't a hammock for me. And I know people that make a lot less. Some of the disabled who were born disabled, who didn't get a chance to work, they're getting like $300-$400 a month. You can't live on $300-$400 a month. And most of them don't. Most of them have to stay at home with their parents, even if they're fully functioning except for their disability. If they're mentally there, where they don't have to live with someone, they still end up having to because of the lack of funds. And they just, you know, listening to that story that you started out with today, and by the way, is there a link to that story? Do you have
Isaac sent it to me from over at Daily Kos.
Okay. Because I hadn't seen that story before, but I know last night I was reading a story in, was in Indiana, and a 14-year-old got pregnant from a boy who raped her. And
Elwood, Indiana.
Yeah. And I don't care how the... when I say that, I don't mean that I don't care she was right. It doesn't matter to me how the girl got pregnant. I couldn't look at her and say the word slut or whore or anything else. My only thought would be for the... My only concern would be for her and her soon-to-be baby.
Right, and yet she says in a newspaper article, she said, "I can't walk out the door without someone calling me a whore or a slut. I used to have a lot of friends or people I thought were my friends, but as soon as this happened, I just isolated myself." They've even vandalized her home, scrawling "whore" and "slut" on the garage doors.
Yep, and I can't for the
life.
Kevin,
remember, this is Elwood, Indiana, where they value life, and they got a culture of life, and they love the little fetuses, right?
Yep, but it's that old story. Once the fetus becomes a baby, then no, we can't help it out at all.
Yeah, you're on your own, Stewie. Right, without a doubt. But see, that's interesting. You know, she says that people are kind of shocked by the fact that she's 8 months pregnant, and I agree. I agree with your assessment. I would never think something about something like that about a young woman who had gotten pregnant. But by the same token, I'll tell you what I do think when I see it, and we see where we live, we see it a lot, Kevin. Listen, it's the norm. Teen pregnancy where we live is the norm, not the exception.
Yep.
And so, you know, we see it and we go, not surprised. I mean, I live in a state where in fifth grade when they give you the health lecture, parents are allowed to send a letter to the school saying, "I don't want my children getting that heck lecture about how the baby parts work because it's demonic."
Yep. Yep. And
so babies having babies is just another daggum day at the office in West Virginia. And I'm surprised that anybody's surprised in Elwood, Indiana. And, of course, this young woman was made pregnant by a rapist.
Yep. And I didn't hear any background on the alleged rapist, but I'll almost guarantee you he probably was a very popular student athlete type of person.
Well, it's hard to say, but I'll look here and see what I can find out. But he was 17, she's 14, and he's been hauled up on charges of child molestation.
Yep.
She was 13 when she was raped. But lo and behold, you know, and there's one of those words. The Indianapolis Star is the newspaper in question. They are owned, of course, by Gannett. And here's the headline. "An Elwood girl became pregnant in a sexual assault at 13. Her case illustrates a growing problem in Indiana." Well, can I take that headline writer out and have a little conversation with him or her? Because I'd like to know what the growing problem in Indiana is. Teenage pregnancy or rape or both?
Yep.
But we don't want to offend anybody's delicate sensibilities. So naturally, the headline says an Elwood girl became pregnant in a sexual assault at 13. Why does it not say, Kevin, an Elwood girl became pregnant in a rape at 13?
Exactly. And I can't understand how people can be so cruel. And that was my first thought when I read that story. And we wonder why people end up with mental problems.
Why, Kevin? Why, Kevin, is this poor child having a rape baby? I thought the female body was had ways of stopping that stuff.
Yeah, exactly. And makes you wonder about the parents, because at 13, I don't want my kid having a baby. So might have considered an abortion, might not. Maybe I would have at least thought about it if it were my child. And so that makes me wonder, are the parents pro-lifers, so to speak?
Probably.
I didn't get that impression from the mother, at least from what I read of what the mother had to say. But 13, you're going to let your child... If that pregnancy could have been stopped, I would have stopped it. It just...
She is due on July the 2nd, Kevin. She's 14 years old now, and nobody's been able to step in and at least offer her the alternative of not carrying that baby to term. And I think this is one of those moments where you and I have to defer to the women in the Horn family commune.
Right.
If you gave birth to a baby that was the product of rape, would there ever come a time when you would not look at the baby and think of the rape? Does that ever go away? Because, you know, the right wing likes to talk about it. You know, a woman suffers from abortion forever if she has one, right? Well, how about the woman who has a rape baby? Does she ever stop looking at the child, and the instant she looks at the child, she suddenly gets triggered and gets to relive the dadgum rape? I mean, can we not at least come to a consensus that there are just some times in life when terminating a pregnancy is the smart, decent, and yes, humane thing to do for all concerned?
Yeah, and again, I go back to what this girl will live the rest of her life with. Not only that, but the shaming that she's gone through. You think this girl in 10, 15 years isn't going to be one messed up person? Unless she's got some really good counseling somewhere, I bet on it. And that angers me, because it doesn't need to be. But apparently over in Indiana, values the life of a fetus more than the life...
Well, isn't Indiana one of those bizarre states that passed the kill all the Planned Parenthood people and there shall be no... And fetuses feel pain and all of that silly crap? I mean, if the young woman had wanted an abortion, would she have even been able to obtain one?
Well, if I was her parent and I knew that we were going to get an abortion, I would have driven 1,000 miles to do it if that was what it took, you know.
And of course, with the story in the news recently, Sandra pointing out something in regard to this conversation as well. She said, reaching via Twitter at Bob Kincaid, and that child would not have had access to Plan B.
Nope.
Dear God in heaven.
Yeah, and just... I don't know. I had to remark on that, though, because it just troubled me so much.
Well, I'm so glad you did, because you've kind of opened a door here. You know, Agnes and I maintain a communication here non-verbally via a chat while everything's hooked up. And I just queried her as to how this all plays out for the mother of a rape baby. And I said, you know, what of how mama will look at the baby in the future? She said, first of all, you're going to suffer from the PTSD of the rape forever after. So I asked her, well, what about how you look at the baby? And she said, of course she's going to remember the rape when she looks at the baby. And then she writes quotes. Mommy, tell me how you met Daddy.
Exactly. Or where is Daddy?
Well, Daddy's doing 25 to life in the pen for creating you, honey.
Yep. Yep. Yeah, I just...
Or there's always the possibility, Agnes points out, that even if she manages to keep the story under wraps, the little town of, say, Elwood, Indiana, will make sure, somewhere around maybe second grade, third grade, especially one of the fine, upstanding followers of Jesus, will make sure that they tell her how she came into this world.
Yep.
But by all means, let's get ourselves all in an uproar over a libertarian rat. But you know, who am I?
Yeah, well, that's the whole thing. It's now become a big distraction to talk about this without talking about all the other stuff that needs to be talked about.
Yeah, oh, and by the way, Marty pointing out, Daddy in this case appears to be in the juvenile system. He won't be doing that much time. More like Daddy will sue the girl and her family either for custody or visitation rights.
Yeah, because rapists have the right to do that in this country. I've seen the court rulings on that, and it's just amazing that a judge anywhere could consider giving the rapist custody, particularly when they're convicted. You know, that little part right there should absolve you from any contact with the child. Once you're a convicted felon of the attack, you shouldn't be able to have any contact with the child. But we allow it. And that's, I guess, where I want to move. Is Mars available for colonization yet? You know, that's where I'm at.
I don't know. I hear there's properties open at the Tannhauser gate. But no, I get your meaning, Kevin. Is there anywhere that people are actually working on simple, common human decency in this world? No, I get what you mean entirely.
Yeah. And so, anyway, I'm going to let you go at that, Bob, because I really am at a loss for words over stories like this. And Chipper Jones, who for years lived off the cheers of the fans of Atlanta, who financially doesn't have a care in the world for the rest of his life and his grandchildren's lives, is going to tweet something like that.
Yeah, it's real funny when the alligators start working on the Mexicans.
I don't know. So, anyway, I'm going to let you go at that because anything else I say can and probably will be used against me.
No, you just get to that point where everything's going to turn into just strange little animal noises after a while. But don't feel bad about that. I deal with that quite often, Kevin. I really do. Just you make those strangled little... And it doesn't seem to make much sense, but... That's how it winds up playing out.
Yeah.
So, no, I believe you me. I more than understand. I'm glad you brought up the Indiana story, though, because I had intended to get there, and I wouldn't have wanted this to not be there.
Yeah. Well... If you do want some entertainment, there's a clip out there of Alex Jones losing it in Great Britain.
I ran that last night. That's
yep.
Why are you still here? Why haven't they killed you? It was precious.
Yeah, common sense questions that apparently a good majority of the teabagging Tea Party Nation doesn't ask themselves. You know, if it truly is like Alex Jones says, why are you here? Why haven't they killed you? And you talk about people being disappeared. Well, I haven't noticed anyone disappearing lately, other than from things that have no relation to politics, you know. But I'm more than willing to see Alex Jones disappear. So.
But in your case, I'll make an exception.
Yeah, right, yeah. Anybody who wants to disappear Alex Jones, or at least...
Ah, no, we don't want Alex disappeared. He's too much fun. What would we do without him to kick around? I mean, it's good for my vocal range because I get to talk like this once in a while, and it's very good for me.
Yeah, except after about 5 minutes of that, it's very hard to talk at all. You lose your...
Well, that's true. You know, you talk like you smoke 6 packs of Pall Malls a day, and, well, it'll...
Yep.
You limeys don't understand freedom's what you don't understand. Oh, Jesus, the stupid. It hurts us, doesn't it, Kevin?
Well, you know, out here in Colorado, speaking of Alex Jones, there's a group up in northwest Colorado that is talking about seceding. They want to create...
Oh, are they now?
Yep.
Are they going to go, because wasn't in Atlas Shrugged, wasn't Galt's Gulch in Colorado?
I believe so.
Yeah, oh goody, they're going to go form Galt's Gulch. They're going to have a high old time, aren't they, building their own roads and stuff. Oh, well, they're going to let us do that for them, right?
Yep.
I mean, it may be a libertarian wonderland, but they still need somebody build the roads.
Well, that's what I've come to the conclusion to. You want to succeed, go right ahead. But you are no longer dependent upon the U.S. of A. for nothing. You're on your own. You get attacked, you're on your own. You experience famine, water shortage, any of the normal things that happen in a country on a daily basis, you're on your own. Don't come to me as, because you're the ones that are saying you don't want a social safety net. So guess what? You'll get exactly what you asked for. No social safety net. And I would be willing, more than willing, to give these people their own state to do that. But once they go there...
No, Kevin, I want to give them their own planet to do that. And then I want to put a force field around it and make sure that they can never get off that planet and nobody else can ever. It's going to be that Star Trek planet from the first one, the one with Christopher Pike in the wheelchair going beep 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 beep. You know, that one. It's off limits. It's treason to go there. You just can't. And we'll call it,
yep.
I don't know, Planet Rand. Work for you?
You can call it Alex Jones Wonderland or something.
Jones.
You know?
Oh, God, that's a bad movie sequel. Jones World. Hello and welcome to Jones World.
Yeah.
Hey, Kevin, you have yourself a good night, my friend.
You too, Bob, and thank you, and we'll talk to you later on.
All right, take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye now. Of course, now Agnes is mean. I said give them a planet. Agnes says, no, give them an island. They don't believe in global warming. Yeah, that's that old joke about Noah and God saying, how long can you tread water? Right. So it is, we're going to take another break before we wrap the program up. We are not, let's see. Agnes and I are not connected via Skype right now, so we'll take a little break. If you want to jump in on the Skype line, that's cool. A little break, and we come back, and, well, since we're talking about going to other planets and stuff, why not? This looks good. This is Conversation Radio. This is The Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid.
Please don't say a word.
23 minutes past the hour. Like I said, the old DJ in me likes to. Starship Troopers. A little art rock. Yes, from the, 1970s to say the least. It is, we're almost down to the last half hour of conversation radio this evening. If you want to get involved in the program, you're more than welcome to do so. 304-658-3333 is the studio line, or just to make direct access, Bob Kincaid Horn on Skype. Okie doke? Okay. Marty ever, I think Marty's our science fiction consultant. Marty pointing out, actually, the Randians have spoiled this planet enough. Leave them this world. Let us go to the stars. Yeah, maybe we put the force field around it, right. And they don't believe, I don't know. How long would it take them to wipe out the ability of humans to live here so we could come back and fix things? Let's see. Looking into the mailbag, bobkincaid@gmail.com. Granny D in Tennessee. Hi, Bob. Well, damn it. Ain't y'all never heard of legitimate rape? Needless to say, this kind of BS insanity infuriates me. I'll name those God-fearing folk to the hottest hell they love so much. Good thoughts to you and the Horn family, Granny T. Good thoughts right back to you, Granny T. Thanks for the comment. From Jack in Shreveport, and thank you. Thank you, Jack, for helping out this evening. Thank you, Sal, as well. Under the subject line, sick of it like Steve is, Jack says, I regularly scream these days because I've reached the point where I just don't feel like trying to be nice to the people whom we're up against. And I'm not talking about the rich ones. I'm talking about the ignorant and fearful. You left out the stupid, Jack. Not that I'm criticizing. I managed, Jack says, to find and attach a relatively short letter to the editor from my local paper. What made me scream was that the writer managed to get almost every single sentence wrong in some way. I think you can figure out what I'm talking about. But to get you started, what the hell is a feel-good liberal anyway? Oh, my God, this is going to be one of those. It's grammar night on the horn. Grammar! Can I have some milk and cookies with that? And it is us that are motivated by emotion only. No, we can think a bit, but there's data to show that conservatives react with emotion. Here's the letter. Oh, dear God. I think this is from the Shreveport Moral Volcano and Battle Cry of Freedom. Written by, and that term is apparently used loosely by the letters to the editor, editorial staff of the Moral Volcano and Battle Cry of Freedom, written by J.D. Womack. I remember when you could count on a Womack to do you some pretty decent music, but not this guy. J.D. Womack writes, "The greatest threat to individual American freedoms are the feel-good intentions of a liberal. Everything these people do is motivated by emotion. You can accuse a liberal of many things, but you can never accuse them of being deep thinkers." Because this guy is. One of my favorites. "They could care less about the ramifications of their policies or people who don't think the way they do." You know, J.D. Womack, when you're using your little word processor, if there's a big line that appears under a whole sentence, it means your grammar's being tormented. And you should probably go let her out of the pit in the basement. "They could care less about the ramifications of their policies or people who don't think the way they do." Yes, we could care less, because we care. "They are the most selfish and insecure people I have ever seen. The gun bill that died in the Senate is a shining example of meaningless feel-good intentions. Nothing in this bill would have stopped the atrocity at Sandy Hook Elementary," that's capital S, everything else lowercase, "Sandy Hook Elementary, but that doesn't matter. It makes them feel better. Criminals don't follow laws, hence the word criminal." Duh. A damn straw in sight and no tequila bottle. "Criminals don't follow laws, hence the word criminal." No, criminals, never mind. "Perhaps we need to outlaw criminals by enforcing our current laws." And the word "current" is in quotes for reasons known but to God and J.D. Womack. "Background checks, we already have hundreds on the books. Enforce them, please." Really? Hundreds? Background checks? Strange place, that Louisiana. "Assault weapons? If I kill 12 people with 2 6-shot revolvers, is that not an assault weapon? The fact is, liberals live in a utopian dream world, while the rest of us slowly lose our freedoms as a result of their feel-good intentions." There are apparently no standards at all at work in the letters to the editor department of the Shreveport Battle Cry of Freedom and Moral Volcano. "If I, a taxpaying, law-abiding U.S. citizen who has never broken any gun laws, decide that I want a semi-automatic rifle with a 100-round clip, I should be able to own one in spite of the misguided efforts of the Communist Democratic Party." Come on, everybody. It's time to sing the Internationale. "Wait until Obamacare kicks in. Talk about your individual freedoms vanishing. Yeah, that individual freedom to die uninsured, that's going to suck when it vanishes for some people. I mean, damn. But I guess liberals never really thought about that law either. God help us." Interesting he would bring up that topic. Because there was another letter came out not too long back. And I must say it was considerably better written than J.D. Womack's. I don't know if he copied it out in purple crayon between his toes on the wall before he sent it into the Moral Volcano and Battle Cry of Freedom, but, oh well. So I'm looking for this. I'm looking for this story because it is a much better letter, and I would like it ever so much if what is apparently a rather slow some rather slow interweb tubes would cooperate. Darn it. Yeah, there we go. We're getting there. Yep, we're going to have to go to it even a little further back. That's okay. We'll get there. I didn't think it was that far away. I've gotten to where I don't like to overload a bunch of tabs onto the machine here because it kind of makes it go crazy. Oh, by the way, Daryl Issa has slipped into that Joe McCarthy land where he can't turn over the list of the communists in the State Department, and Issa won't turn over the evidence that he claims he has that, you know, Benghazi, the IRS, coordinated with the Obama administration, blah, 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 blah. Yeah. Because, you know, oh, there he is. There he is. Instead of J.D. Womack, we're talking about Gary W. Bornman. Gary W. Bornman wrote a letter to the NRA, and in the form of an op-ed. Now, this guy's in a supermax prison in Colorado. Compare his grammar with that of J.D. Womack, tax-paying, law-abiding American citizen who thinks he should be able to have an assault rifle with a 100-round clip in it if he daggum wants to, because that's his right, and us feel-good liberals can't slow him down. Gary W. Bornman was told by a judge in the 81 convictions that he managed to apply to his rap sheet over the course of his existence. One judge said to him, "It does not appear you can be rehabilitated, nor does it appear you can be deterred," and sent him to the Supermax in Colorado. Well, in the op-ed, Mr. Bornman writes, "As a lifelong career criminal, although I no longer enjoy the right to keep and bear arms, I'd like to take a moment to express my appreciation to the National Rifle Association for nonetheless protecting my ability to easily obtain them through its opposition to universal background checks." Well, J.D. Womack says that there are hundreds of them on books already. And we call them crit, because duh. Mr. Bornman continues, "Upon release in a few years from my current federal sentence on bank robbery and weapons charges, I fully anticipate being able to stop at a gun show on my way home to Connecticut, where new laws have made it nearly impossible for a felon to readily purchase guns or ammunition in order to buy some with which to resume my criminal activities. And so a heartfelt thank you to the NRA and all those members of Congress voting with them. I, along with tens of thousands of other criminals, couldn't do what we do without you." Yeah, somewhere between Colorado and Connecticut. Oh, I don't know, in a state maybe like Tennessee, West Virginia, Kentucky. You can just stop and pull in at the friendly gun show and pick him up some shooting irons because, you know, freedom. Wolverines! Right? Yeah. Mr. Bornman, with 81 convictions on his rap sheet, makes a hell of a lot more sense than upstanding, law-abiding goober J.D. Womack. Fritz, writing from Arkansas, says, "The horn goes prog rock?" Listening to that Yes song made me think of a scenario that you could have been doing one of those old, all-night, old-time underground FM radio shows, or perhaps guest hosting on KAAY's Beaker Street back in the day. That all occurred before my time, although I've heard recordings of such shows. Most of my DJ work was done on top 40 pop stations. They'd have fired me if I'd played a 9-minute song. I mean, this was in Alabama, and even the 9-minute version of Freebird was off limits. Mark, I'm afraid I'm going to have a little bit more. Oh yeah, okay, I get it. Mark writes in, AP Benghazi, IRS surveillance gate. Now this, and Mark just uses two words, concerted action, and sends me a screenshot of a story. Alex Jones acolyte and car dealer brother land history show. I've really kind of had it with the History Channel. I have. I admit it. I'm done. Just done. Pawn Stars can be a little bit interesting. Pickers doesn't do anything for me. I thought it was going to be about banjos, and but no, it's not. Mancow Muller has a brother who is a car salesman in Missouri. And they are being given, I kid you not, and it makes me think that maybe I've got a future at the daggum History Channel. No, I don't. They're getting a program about selling cars and doing stupid shit in Missouri. Is a liberal, a progressive, anybody ever going to be getting? No. Oh, by the way, a little update. I guess the Bradley Manning trial is going to be reduced to comic book form, and you know that's really appropriate because the Bradley Manning trial is a cartoon. It's a joke. It's a parody of anything resembling justice. I want a show on the History Channel. Couldn't we have fun? I think we could. Oh, by the way, just going back to some of the topicality from the beginning of the program, I found this interesting. Cranky old Ron Paul, the guy who thought it was heroic and patriotic for a man to sell black market meat during the Second World War and violate the laws that were put in place to make sure that our troops could actually eat food. But Ron Paul thought that was, what do you call, government meddling? Yeah. Now, Ron Paul has Ron Paul, who received donations and votes from Mr. Snowden. Ron Paul went on the Piers Morgan program on CNN last night and called Snowden said he had embarked on a heroic effort. Well, let's listen in, shall we? If I'm going to scream, I may as well, scream. You know, if Ron Paul says that it's raining outside. No, if Ron Paul says it's not raining outside, I'm putting on a raincoat. This guy is perpetually wrong. Anti-American. Yeah. And I'll say that about him. He is. Any man who thinks that black marketeering during the Second World War was a good idea, he's pretty much a monster in my book. And that's Ron Paul. It was a story he told proudly. But let's go back to the cranky old Ron.
You are a supporter.
Okay, that's gone sideways. Never mind. We're not going to do it after all. For somebody to tell the American people the truth is a heroic effort, and he knows that it's very risky. He knows he's committing civil disobedience, and he knows that he could get punished. Civil disobedience? Really? This is the same? Really? Really? Snowden is the same as Rosa Parks refusing to give up her seat I didn't know Rosa Parks got a $200,000 a year salary working for a government contractor in the spying business. See, I think I might feel a little differently about Mr. Snowden if he hadn't collected the salaries for a couple of years and maybe squirreled them away. I'm not saying there's no value to this information. It has value. And I'm not saying that he is going without risk. But this Elvis concert panty throwing has got to stop. That's just silly. Oh, but speaking of silly, I can't let this wait until. I can't let this wait. Oh, damn it, no audio. Rat fart. We will save that. We'll save that for prayer meeting Wednesday. Hey, here's some good news. And by all means, let's enjoy it. One of the things I noticed last year when I got that brief chance to go to Europe, I asked my hosts over there what one does in a restaurant with regard to the bill. They said, well, you just pay the bill. I said, what about the tip? He said, tip? What is this tip? I said, you know, the gratuity that you add on. Oh, you only do that if they've given you super premium service and done something really, really special. I said, really? They're making a living? Oh, yes, they make a living wage here. That's why it's expensive to eat in restaurants. And it was true. It has apparently made an appearance in the United States. This story comes out of New York City, and it has to do with a restaurant called Sushi Yasuda. It is upscale. The 1% probably eat there. But the management of Sushi Yasuda has eliminated the idea of tipping. Every tab now says, And I hope this is not some sort of joke, because I'm looking at the tab here and it says one edamame, $9, one kimo, $10.50, one a la carte sushi, $243, taxable, $262.50, subtotal, $262.50, sales tax, $23.30, total due, $285.80. And then at the bottom of the tab it says, following the custom in Japan, Sushi Yasuda's service staff are fully compensated by their salary. Therefore, gratuities are not accepted. This is not because I'm cheap and don't like tipping. It's because I think that people who work in restaurants deserve a living wage. It's coming from a blog called The Price Hike by Ryan Sutton. He says, I track consumer prices. I'm the New York City food critic for Bloomberg News. Ryan Sutton writes, American eaters, unlike their Europe counterparts, are long accustomed to voluntarily adding 18 to 20% to any dinner bill to compensate the wait staff for their services. But one New York City restaurant has put an end to that. The critically acclaimed Sushi Yasuda, a 14-year-old Japanese restaurant in Midtown Manhattan, eliminated tipping last month and raised its menu prices to reflect that development. Owner Scott Rosenberg tells The Price Hike. Here's what guests now see, and it's what I read you. Rosenberg suggests Yasuda might be the only U.S. restaurant with such a policy. He might be right. A variety of ambitious American eateries like Alinea, Next, Atera, and Brooklyn Fare already add automatic service charges as part of their prepaid dining systems, but Yasuda's move is closer to the European-style system adopted by Thomas Keller's Per Se in 2005, where all prices are reflective of service, a policy Keller implemented to help correct the income disparity between cooks and waitstaff, per a piece he wrote in the New York Times. And apparently the people who go to Sushi Yasuda aren't flipping out. The owner of the restaurant says they don't think twice about it. And Mr. Rosenberg, who was interviewed for this story, says he's got one customer who now says he'll order 20% more sushi since the tipping is no longer required. And listen to the reasoning behind Mr. Rosenberg's decision. He said, I've always dreamed, wouldn't it be great not to have to worry about tipping? Look at your bill, make sure it's correct, and then sign the check if you're good, and you won't have to think and calculate and do a math equation at the table. And then he says, the risk is that your prices appear to be high on the menu, but if you have faith in what you're serving and how you're serving it, you know that when your customers have a good meal and look at their final tally, it's going to be around the same. What our customers find is that they're essentially paying the same, maybe a touch less, because we're a little more conservative about how we adjusted our prices. Your service staff, for those who want to pursue that as an ongoing career, they have stability. They become part of a family, and that's special. You have to be all in if you're a salaried professional. It also attracts people who are more serious about being a part of that craft and being a part of that journey. Now, the reality of what it means to wait tables in New York is that pay starts at $2.25 per hour because wait staff are not included in the minimum wage law. The non-tipped minimum wage is 7.25. And apparently the idea has caught on at a restaurant in San Diego called The Linkery. But instead of just including everything, they tack on an 18% gratuity at the bottom of the tab automatically. I find that encouraging. Where it's going to make a difference is when it reaches down to McDonald's and Wendy's and Burger King. Because that's where the real inequity is. That's where the real injustice is. Because they're paying a minimum wage and they don't, you know, they don't, and you don't tip. You don't tip. It would do us well. It would do us well to understand what really goes on in these business transactions. And to understand, well, it's like when I was talking with Jeff a while back, and we talked about, alongside the U.S. recommended daily allowances for nutrition value, we had some sort of a cruelty index or a humanity index. I always pay attention in restaurants to wait staff because I don't have it in me. You've got these wonderful people who bring you delightful food, hopefully, and they're always smiling, and they're really doing their best to serve you well. And they may be having a lousy day. The world may be gone to completely crap back at home. But they're smiling and trying to make you happy in your experience in a restaurant. I couldn't do that in a million years. I couldn't. And they do it for wages that are hardly something that we would recognize as living wages. And some people still stiff. You know, I guess that's the thing as we wrap things up tonight. A lot of us know what it would take to make this country a better place. Living wages, access to health care, a little less likelihood that we'll be blown away in a movie theater or our children wasted at school. We know the answers. And I think the people who are holding us back, you know, the Rand Pauls and the Ron Pauls, and the Dianne Feinsteins, and the Joe Manchins, and the John Boners, and the Eric Cantors. I think they know we know. And that's where we get the disconnect that exists, the dysfunctional disconnect that exists in this country today. We have reached a point in our body politic where we are actively engaged in the seemingly endless struggle between the irresistible force and the immovable object. And to hopelessly mix metaphors, ultimately it becomes the question of who's going to blink. And what I was talking about with McDonald's and stuff, Agnes writes, and that, my dear, is where 24-year-old mothers work, or 14-year-old mothers work. Whew, mercy. And I guess the question I ask myself is, what if you could separate the rank and file of the alleged right wing from the alpha males and females of that herd? Would you be able to start talking common sense? Or is it, as Jack notes, an act of futility? I don't know. Just like waiting tables, I don't have the patience to talk to them. You know, I hear Benghazi, eyes roll back in the head, And I start speaking in tongues and reaching for serpents and looking for a mason jar of strychnine to swig. Yeah, Waggy, I get it. Please pardon my language, this from the chat room, but I'm embarrassed to be from the same planet as some of these asshats. Yeah. So, hey, we made it through the program with no obvious audio gremlinery. Oh, there's a word. Let's cross our fingers that the same will obtain, say, long about tomorrow, about 6 p.m. Eastern time. What do you think? Prayer meeting Wednesday on the horn? Thank you, everybody, who got all of this, who took care of us this evening and helped us make sure that we will see July as a function of June. Thank you very much. It makes it much easier to do this without sweating bullets at the same time. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff, Lottie and Sparky and Texas Betsy in the chat room. Thank you to our news ninjas, Gene and Susan. Thank you to John Fox. Thank you to Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. A note, there is going to be an RSS feed for Dr. Bill up at the at the portion of White Rose Society dedicated to the new Virtual Center for the Study of the Constitution, so that you can plug right into that and get his show delivered to you as quick as it loads. And if you are not listening to Dr. Bill O'Brien's Virtual Center for the Study of the Constitution, you have no idea what you're missing, and when you do jump in, your mind is going to be blown. So check it out, by all means. Dr. Bill will be back on the air 4 o'clock Eastern Time tomorrow. Thanks go out always to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the folks at Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net, and AICACT.org. We still need your help with the AIC Act. We need you to reach out to your congresspeople and then let us know that you have done it so that we can follow up and sort of force multiply the whole effort. Thank you. And always, 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 Gina, Judy, it's all for you. Good night, y'all.